Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And this is another mini episode
where
we tell you what is in the news. I struggled this week because usually I like hear a lot of stuff and like see a lot of stuff on social media. And yesterday I was just kind of like, I don't really know what's going on in the world right now. Like, is there anything big happening?
Well, the media has been consumed with one thing. So I thought we should talk about it. Although if people have been invested in what's going on in the media or like other news podcasts or whatever, they've probably already heard about all about this. But we should probably touch on Sharpiegate.
What the fuck is Sharpiegate?
Where have you been?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I haven't heard, like, anything.
So, you know that Hurricane Dorian has been happening.
Yes.
We will touch on the ways in which it has, like, ravaged the Bahamas, which is horrifying and sad. But we should also talk about how fucking unhinged our president is. And I've heard a lot of people talk about how, like, oh, there's so much bad stuff going on in the world right now. Why would you be focusing on this stupid thing? And I will explain why I think that it is important to talk about. But I will explain the situation to you.
Please, teach me things.
This all began on Sunday. The president tweeted last Sunday, he tweeted a warning about Hurricane Dorian and said that in addition to Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama will most likely be hit, in parentheses, much harder than anticipated by the storm. Now, the path of Hurricane Dorian was not supposed to hit Alabama at all. Every weather service, professional.
Was he trying to make it about... Was he trying to make it a U.S. problem?
I think he just made a mistake. Okay. Like, you know, because he is the...
Because I thought he was like, oh, but we're going to suffer too. Don't forget about us.
No, because originally it was supposed to hit Florida really hard. And like, so people were preparing. People had been preparing for this hurricane.
Right.
To hit, you know, the southeast for a while. But I think he just made a mistake when he included Alabama. Because it was not supposed to hit Alabama at all. Like, he just tweeted incorrectly.
Right.
But the issue with that, when you have a president who just spouts off at the fucking mouth the way that he does,
people pay attention
to
it
and
listen. Yeah.
So now people who thought they were in the clear from this hurricane started panicking. And so they started calling the weather services in Alabama, asking if they needed to prepare. Do I need to evacuate?
Yeah.
Do I need to, like, you know, get ready for
this
hurricane to hit.
Yeah.
And so the Birmingham National Weather Service quickly responded and corrected him. They tweeted out that the following: Alabama will not see any impacts from Dorian. We repeat, no impacts from Hurricane Dorian will be felt across Alabama. The system will remain too far east. So they tweeted this. Seems like that should be simple.
Yeah.
We're done. The president made a mistake. You know, and if it was any other fucking president, he probably would have either moved on completely or acknowledged that he made a mistake, right? Not our president. So he decided that he was going to give a, like, an update from the White House on September 4th, which was last Wednesday. He used an outdated map already. So he had a map up that he was, like, using to show, like, the cone of, like, where this hurricane would be headed.
Right.
That map was already out of date. And a lot of, like, weather experts questioned why the president was giving outdated information already. Like, because the projections were incorrect. However, he didn't even really cover his ass. And this is why it's called Sharpiegate. And honestly, it's objectively funny. Like, it is objectively funny until you realize the deeper implications of this. He had the map, had a cone going towards where the hurricane would be.
Right.
And then in Sharpie, there was an addition onto the map that included Alabama. So he was like, here's where the hurricane is going to go. And then, yeah, you see, it totally shows that it's going to go to Alabama, but it's literally just an He used a Sharpie to include Alabama in this projection.
Yes.
And just thought that all of us would be like, yeah, that looks legit. You know what I mean?
I have to say I'm relieved because when you said Sharpiegate, I am a Sharpie obsessed woman. I probably own close to 200 Sharpies of different colors and sizes and shapes. And I was like, what has Sharpie done? Do I have to stop using Sharpies? Please don't tell me that. So I'm a bit relieved, but what the fuck?
It's just so...
It's so Trump.
Insane. And yes, it is. And like, so when people are saying that this is insignificant in some way, I'm like, it's actually not, because it
He's
emphasizes...
affecting the lives.
First of all, yeah, it's first of all, it's illegal to issue a false or altered official weather forecast, and okay. It can be punished by a fine or 3 months in prison. You can't do that. So first of all, there's that. Secondly, it does affect people's lives practically. Yeah. It's an objective truth. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Weather is a science.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can't alter that to your narrative to have it fit what you want it to fit.
Yeah. And it also shows his complete break with reality and facts that he cannot let this go at all. Like, he can't admit fault or just like admit that he was wrong.
No, of course not.
About this thing, and that he literally will not let it die. So, after Alabama tweeted that, hey, no, you don't have to be worried about this. We are weather scientists, and we're yes. telling you that this hurricane isn't going to hit Alabama. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross reportedly threatened to fire some of the nation's weather officials if they refused to lie to the public about the projected path of Hurricane Dorian. New reporting indicates he made these threats under pressure from acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney and President Trump himself. Ross wanted top officials at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, an agency under his purview, to claim scientists at the agency's Birmingham, Alabama National Weather Service branch were mistaken when they corrected a tweet President Trump sent ahead of Dorian's arrival that said that the storm would most likely affect Alabama. So he is threatening to fire people because they corrected the president's incorrect information. They want them to go on and lie and say, no, the president was actually right, our mistake, because they hurt the president's ego and they hurt his feelings. That should terrify people.
Yes.
You know, I understand that there's a lot going on in the world and, like, yeah, maybe, like, focusing on this thing that's funny that's become the, like, subject of so many, like, jokes and memes it seems inconsequential, but it's not, because it's such an attack on facts and it's attack on science.
And it's an attack on our safety, because our president's ego has become more important than scientific facts.
And the safety of his citizens.
Yes.
And so he has still not backed down from this. He continues to tweet about how he was right and it's the fake news media that's trying to make him look bad.
Just
and
let go,
how
dude, move on.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so
It's crazy. And like meanwhile, with all of this happening,
right,
the hurricane did hit the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, devastating huge areas of the Bahamas. The death toll currently is 50 people, but there are still 1,300 people missing. So the number of dead is likely to go up.
Wow.
And in addition to that, the Trump administration will not give temporary protective status to Bahamians who have fled Hurricane Dorian. So he is not allowing any protective status because he claims that he's afraid that we are going to let gang members and drug dealers into the country from the Bahamas, which, again, is just continuing with his weird outlook that, like, every single brown immigrant
is bad.
Right. They're in a state of fucking crisis. They've lost their homes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're refugees.
But he's focusing on one particular thing. And
which he has no basis for.
Nothing at all. And that actually kind of, so, like, the thing that I was reading this week, and I want to talk more on that as well, but I just want to bring this up briefly, is that he is trying to basically, like, redirect immigrants from coming to the U.S. by having them first go to countries like Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico, things like that. So if you're an asylum seeker, not to have the U.S. be your first stop. Although, especially with Honduras, I was reading that, like, you know how we talked about, like, the travel thing where it's like, maybe don't go to this country because XYZ
sure.
right now.
Yeah, like, advisory.
Yeah, like the crime rates are high. And I guess like in the US, Honduras has been on that like high crime list for a while. And they're saying, maybe don't take a vacation there. It might not be the best idea for you. Yet now he's saying that asylum seekers are to be sent to Honduras. He's talking with the president of Honduras, trying to get this in writing, basically, where these people who are escaping from their countries that are dangerous, he's then telling them, just go to a different, potentially dangerous place.
Well, and we...
And they don't have the tools, and they don't have the abilities to create asylum for them.
We already have asylum seekers coming here from places like Guatemala.
Exactly.
So it doesn't really make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because the U.S. actually disrupted that entire region.
Yeah.
And, like, caused a lot of unrest there. That's why people are trying to come here.
Exactly. But he's saying, it says, the administration has previously tried to secure a series of agreements with Mexico and other Central American countries, such as Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, as a strategy to block asylum seekers from reaching the southern U.S. border. And it's been proven that by doing this, like, you're leaving these people in just other bad conditions. You're not really giving them, they don't have the tools and the ability to create what asylum is for these immigrants.
Right, they don't have
the
programs in place either, I don't believe.
Yeah, and the CBP Commissioner Mark Morgan detailed how administration officials are discussing similar agreements with Central American countries, saying, we continue to talk not only to the Northern Triangle countries, you know, obviously Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, but also Panama, you know, any country that really can step up and is part of the immigration crisis that really is a regional issue, he says. So it just seems like they're trying to...
What does that even
mean? It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why we are putting time and energy into any of this.
Well,
they're trying to secure what they're calling safe third country style agreements. And it's such a... It's very bizarre to me that, like... It just reminds me of what you were saying about the people from the Bahamas. It's like, all these people are othered to them, and they're not important.
Well, they're brown.
Yes,
I mean, like, if we're just gonna, like, come out and say like, actually what it is, like, that's the issue, really.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is, and, like, that's always been what it is. It's not about immigration. It's not an immigration problem. It's a brown people problem, because...
Yeah.
Actually, first of all, immigrants commit less crime in this country than natural-born Americans do. So that's
yeah.
the first thing. And secondly, there are more immigrants, illegal immigrants, if you want to call them that, in this country who are, you know, people from European countries or
yeah.
people from Australia who come here legally and then overstay their visas.
Yeah.
You know,
but they're able to get away with it because of the color of their skin. Like, they kind of can fly under the
radar. Because they come from Western countries.
Right, exactly.
And also that they're white.
It's also much easier for people with, like, white European names or
Absolutely.
From white European countries. Like, I'm going through this with my friend Ricky right now, who's being sent back to South Africa, and his name sounds very Hispanic, his full name. He's from South Africa. He kind of has the cards stacked against him, yet we have friends from London, Australia, and places that have, like, good relationships with the U.S. that have gotten their visas very easily. And it's just, it's such a bizarre concept to me of, like, where we're deciding. It depends on, like, who is looking at your files to decide if you're able to stay here or not. And, like, it's all so biased and personal rather than it having, like, any sort of real basis, any factual basis behind it. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, and just quite honestly, it's a racist system.
Yeah.
Like, that's really a lot of what it is. And we don't go after white people who overstay their visas the same
way.
Because
we don't see them as a threat.
Yeah, but that doesn't, it goes against, then the problem isn't immigration. Do you
no,
know what I mean?
It's race.
Like, then the problem isn't immigration, because you're not worried about people from other countries coming in and taking your jobs. You're worried about
brown
people coming in and taking your jobs.
I agree.
Like,
I totally
that's what you're
you.
Worried about, because there are lots of white people working in this country illegally. I've known lots of white people who've worked in this country
Same.
Illegally. So it's not like that's the issue. And, like, that's what's so fucking frustrating to me
issue.
About this. And these people are asylum seekers, which is completely legal.
Yes.
And they're trying to come into this country legally. Like, that's not illegal
to
seek asylum.
No.
So it, the whole thing is just very, very frustrating.
But he's trying to keep the brown population out and together and keeping them separate.
And he's trying to feed his racist base, yes. Right? Like, I think he...
Always.
Trump is really, really starting to... I mean, he never had it to begin with. Like, he was never all the way there. But right. I think he is becoming more and more unhinged the closer we get to the election.
I agree.
Because he, I think, gets that he's losing ground. And I think it's freaking him the fuck out.
But then it's like, where are we going next? Like, that scares me. If he is slowly becoming more and more dangerous as time goes on, what's going to happen in the next year?
If he loses this election, it's not going to be a peaceful transition of power. I'm under no delusions that it will be. I will be incredibly surprised if it's like a very easy, peaceful transition of power.
He's going to throw a tantrum. He's going to be dragged up kicking and screaming.
And his base will also throw a tantrum. But I think he has to cling to this racist rhetoric because it's the only thing he has left.
Yeah.
He has not fulfilled any of the promises that he gave these people. His popularity continues to fall, and so the only thing that he can hold on to is, look, I kept all the brown people you didn't like out of the country.
Right.
So he can't cave on something like the Bahamas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even though these people are literally, like,
dying,
seeking asylum because their home has been destroyed by a hurricane.
Yeah, and it just at the end of the day, it goes against everything that I feel like America has been based upon since its inception. You know what I mean? Like, we were always about having people come here for safety and protection.
Yes. Yeah. After a certain point, you know, when we stopped.
Well, of course. But I mean, I just think of, like, just history.
Right.
Wanting, I mean, like, America wants to be the good guy. You know what I mean?
We're supposed to be the melting pot. Like, that's what we're supposed to be. But even then, I mean, there were people in Trump's camp who, when asked that question, when saying, like, well, what about the poem that's on the Statue of Liberty that says, give me your poor, you're tired, you're hungry? He said, well, that they actually meant, give us your poor, you're tired, you're hungry, when they're able to stand on their own 2 feet.
That's not what it says.
That's not what it says. You can't rewrite that poem. And then also he was saying, well, it was intended for people coming from European countries. Like, he kept trying
what
to clarify what the writers
you
of that poem
You're not the writer of the poem, Mr. Right. Trump. You can't do that.
Yeah, and it wasn't Trump who said it. I can't remember exactly who said it.
Someone in that
But it was
camp.
Someone working for him in his camp. But
I'm sure he would say the same.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems like madness over there. John Bolton just got fired or resigned. Like, they're fucking... fighting over whether or not he was fired or resigned. Like, Trump's administration just seems to be falling apart at the seams, so this will be an interesting thing to watch over the next year, for sure, because we're almost a year out from the 2020 election, so brace yourself.
Embracing.
So this is not good, but I think something that's worth discussing. So Crazy Rich Asians co-writer... she is an Asian female, and she left writing the sequel. She was supposed to be writing the sequel.
Yeah.
There were two writers on the first Crazy Rich Asians, her being one of them, the other being a white guy named Peter Chiarelli.
Okay.
So there's Adele Lim and Peter Chiarelli, and they wrote the first Crazy Rich Asians adapting the book.
Right.
And they were together writing the sequel. Now, Crazy Rich Asians, as we know, did insanely well.
Yeah.
Insanely, insanely well. But she recently stepped down from writing the sequel because she learned that her co-writer, Peter Chiarelli, was making 8 to 10 times more than her.
Oh my gosh, that is a huge pay gap.
So Peter Chiarelli was initially hired to write Crazy Rich Asians, which is weird anyway.
Yeah.
That they would hire a white man to adapt this this movie. So they did hire a second writer, Adele Lim, to work with him to write this movie.
Smart move. Not smart. Not paying her what she deserves.
So, yeah, because they hired her, the director, John M. Chu, hired Adele Lim.
Okay.
So, in large part, we can say that, like, she was probably instrumental in the movie's success, I would imagine.
Keeping everything, like, legitimate.
She discovered recently that the starting offers from Warner Brothers for the sequel for Peter Chiarelli were $800,000 to $1 million to write this movie.
Oh, damn.
The starting offer for Lim was 110,000.
No.
Yes.
That
so
is wow.
Right. So Warner Brothers tried to defend their choice or their actions by saying that the industry standard established ranges based on experience and that making an exception would set a troubling precedent in the business.
But let's look at the experience of the success of the movie that she, I would assume, had an instrumental role in creating what it was.
In my view.
To me, that is, it was an Oscar-nominated movie. Mm-hmm. The actors did so well. The story, this was the biggest movie of last year.
Let me tell you, Warner Brothers, they don't have the best track record of making a lot of, like, big, you know, grossing movies. With the exception of, with the exception of anything that's like DC.
Yeah.
Of course, those movies are always going to make money.
Yeah.
Or they have big franchises which make them money, like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings. So they make a lot of money based on like those big franchises. But as far as having very successful movies every year that are like standalone movies, they don't have a great track record of that. So this movie being as big as it was a huge deal.
To me, that's experience. To me, that would mean that she should have quite a big pay raise for this next one.
So you could tell me that maybe she was paid a lot less for the first movie because he was the head writer, he was hired first, he has more experience than her, all of those things, I could see that. But for the second movie, there's really, for that large of a pay gap, 8 to 10 times less?
Yeah, that doesn't make that any sense to me.
That is insane. And also, like, it brings up this bigger question of, like, yes, I understand that experience is important, but how are people supposed to get the kind of, like, experience that they need if the new people who are being ushered in every round are white guys?
Yeah.
If the first people you are calling...
I mean, that's the biggest problem with... I mean, a huge problem with our industry is that in order to get the job, you need experience, but you need experience... You know what I mean? Right, like, who's going to give you that opportunity?
It's a catch-22. It always is. And, you know, because if your first instinct on a movie that is 90% people of color is to hire a white guy to write it, you know what I mean? Like, if that's always the first instinct, then we're always going to butt up against this problem.
Right.
So she walked away, and then a few months later, Chiarelli offered her half of his own salary to try and, like, kind of level the playing field, but she still said no. And this is the statement that she gave, and I think it's really great. She says, "Being evaluated that way can't help but make you feel that this is how they view my contributions. Pete, Chiarelli, has been nothing but incredibly gracious, but what I make shouldn't be dependent on the generosity of the white guy writer.
Yeah.
If I couldn't get pay equity after Crazy Rich Asians, I can't imagine what it would be like for anyone else, given that the standard for how much you're worth is having established quotes from previous movies, which women of color would never have been hired for.
Yeah.
There's no realistic way to achieve true equity that way." And that's basically what I was trying to say, is that, like, if you, like, judging by what they're saying, like, these are the business standards that you get paid based on your past work.
Right.
Well, if no one will pay you what you're worth, then the next time you go on to a job, they can justify paying you less because your last job paid you less, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And women of color are, like, very often left out of the conversation. Like, there was a thing from the San Diego State University Center for Study of Women in Television. They published their boxed-in women on screen behind-the-scenes television report, and it found that there are more women. Oh, my God, we need to celebrate because there's more women than ever before.
Right.
Behind the scenes and both on camera. And so people were like, see, look at all the good we're doing.
Bravo.
But when you take a look at the breakdowns in race, you'll see that women of color are actually getting less jobs than they have been in past years.
Yeah.
So these jobs, while more women are working, it's more white women that are working.
Yeah.
So and women
of
color.
And I believe also that when white women are becoming more successful, then that becomes your opportunity then to start highlighting women of color.
Right. Then you need to start, like
your job isn't done. You you still need to include more and more people.
Yeah, women in general, like, women and people of color need to be hiring more women and people of color.
Yeah.
Like, and that's how it's going to work, is because people generally, that's what white guys have been doing forever. They're hiring people who look like them.
Yeah.
You know, so in order for people of color to get ahead, we're going to have to start doing that for each other and, like, building a ladder to allow other women and people of color to move up.
But it's the people in privileges, I would say, it should be their prerogative then to be bringing these other people up. Like, I believe that there's this idea that, like, yes, we want more women in film, we want more women in power, but then it's like, once we just get a white woman, it's like, that's enough, and that's not, like, your job isn't over yet.
Yeah, you're like, we still have one, so, like, what's the problem?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, there's this really awesome series that I have saved that I'm going to post on our Instagram at some point that's basically, like, taking out, like, big, you know, big government meetings and taking out all of the men from those meetings and, like, how many women are actually in the room. Usually, it's only one or two, and usually it's a white woman. But I feel like because they're like, well, we gave you one. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's like that famous Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote where she's just like, when will I think there's enough women sitting on the Supreme Court when there are 12 women sitting on the Supreme Court?
Exactly.
Because for years and years, there were 12 men.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so, like, why do we, like, feel like, oh, my God, you're being so radical by thinking that every
all women.
Yeah. So, so, yeah, I mean, it's, I just thought that was something that we should share and talk about.
Yeah, I think that's like a really important intersectional feminist thing to bring up and to always keep in our conversation on this show, because I believe that white feminism is still highly, highly, highly on the rise.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it's not being stagnant. It's continuing to grow.
Yeah.
And it needs to be a conversation.
And studios also, like, these major corporations and these major companies, like, don't leave it up to the generosity of your employees to fill the gap. You know what I mean?
Because they're going to continue doing what, quote unquote, works. You know what I mean? Like, these studios have been around forever.
And they want to make money. Like, that's they're not looking out for you.
No.
They want to make money.
Exactly. So they're going to continue doing what, quote unquote, works and what you've been doing forever. They don't want to be the ones to make the change.
Yeah, but it's also unfair for you to, like, put your other writers in a position where they, like, they're going to give up their salary to make up for something that you should have done in the first place,
exactly.
Which is, like, pay.
Which is why I think that her standing her ground was a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than just being like, thank you so much for being so kind and generous and giving me half of your paycheck.
Yeah.
I like that she still stood her ground. It was like, no, this is unjust, this isn't right, and I'm curious to see how this movie is going to turn out with a white dude writer.
I mean, my guess is they're going to replace her with another person of color.
They better fucking pay her well.
They also know that, like, they don't, honestly, and, like, this is the sad truth, they don't care really about how good this sequel is, because they know that this sequel is going to make them money regardless, because the first one did so well.
Exactly.
So I don't think they're overly preoccupied in having the best writers for the job.
No, you know? I mean, that's just kind of a sequel way of going about it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, and, you know, to be honest, WB has been guilty of that. Like, all of these last, like, Batman movies have been terrible.
Yeah.
Because they're not written well.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if they're written well, because they're going to make money no matter what.
Because it's still the Batman series or whatever.
So, if you have any stories that you would like us to cover in the news, you know, sometimes it does feel like a light news week.
Yeah.
So, we would totally welcome you sending us any ideas throughout the week, and we would be happy to consider those. You can email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. We are sometimes, not often, on Twitter at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. We also have a Facebook and business page. Feel free to leave us a review either in our Facebook business page or on Apple Podcasts. We would love to do more Reviews Day Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to us on Radio Public. It's free for you. Helps us out a little bit.
Yep.
I think that's everything.
Yeah, I believe so. You guys, thank you so much for listening to another mini episode. That's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.